Pittsburgh, I love you. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zapallo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzapallo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at InsideOffTheWall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, providing laughs downtown Pittsburgh, 811 Liberty Avenue. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at ArcadeComedyTheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Tonight's guest, James Michael Schoberg, founder of Rage of the Stage. Welcome. Good to be chatting with you this evening.
Thank you.
Now, you, aside from founder, you do actually have many titles with Rage of the Stage.
Yes, I'm the co-executive producer.
Yes.
I am the artistic director, and I'm the resident playwright.
Do you have this all on one business card?
I most certainly do.
Nice, yeah. Very good.
Several lines.
Several lines, indeed. Well, we'll start off with a local headline from one of Pittsburgh's fine media outlets to get the conversation rolling tonight. The headline we have here, man dressed as Spider-Man. Arrested for robbery in Oakland. A University of Pitt student charged with one count of robbery while dressed as popular Marvel Comics character Spider-Man, while a roommate says it's probably all a misunderstanding. He's just a college kid, and college kids tend to do strange things. Now, Jim, I have learned a little bit about you over the years, and I'm sure there's much more to know, but one thing that I do know is that you and I are both diehard Batman fans.
Absolutely.
So much so that I worry that the only thing separating you and I from this gentleman's foolish actions may be four martinis. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, I have to say that, and I've said over the years, that if you know that you're going to commit a crime, if you need to commit a crime, that you should do it in costume. If you, even if you don't get caught, that's the kind of thing when they interview people on the news, that's the kind of thing you want to hear. You got to come up with an original identity. Everyone's so keen on being a superhero, but I mean, if you're going to commit a crime, which, face it, is going to be easier than actually, you know, saving somebody.
Yeah.
And always, evil is fundamentally more interesting than good. You know, come up with your own persona. But I don't know why he would do Spider-Man.
To sully Spider-Man's good name in the process. You know, that's what, and if you were a Spider-Man fan, you'd think, okay, maybe instead of, you know, knocking over this grocery or whatever it was, you maybe save a kitten from a tree. Or, you know, well, those guys, I don't know if you saw this, the guys that, the window cleaners at Children's Hospital, they all dressed up as superheroes and they all cleaned them and the kids loved it. Something like that, I think, you know, serves a better purpose. But, yeah, I don't know what Spider-Man's PR folks really have to say about this. I don't know. Halloween, I would guess, is a very special holiday for you, given the themes that take place in a lot of your shows.
That is actually true. We tell a lot of people, my wife and I, we basically tell them that for Rage, Halloween is 365 days a year. So when Halloween rolls around,
it's nothing special. Or maybe that's like this.
Well, when it does finally come around,
a lot of people are saying,
"Well, what are you guys going to do for Halloween?" And I'd say, "Well, you know, I might put my feet up and watch a horror movie or something." But yeah, crazy, insane makeup, over the top stories, scaring the hell out of people. It's, you know, it's Christmas for us. So,
on that note, describe for those that don't know, Rage's mission, Rage of the Stage's mission as a theater company.
Well, as a theater company, what Rage likes to do is, first and foremost, a lot of people don't know this, but we are an educational theater company. A lot of people think, you know, I wouldn't want you educating my kids. But since we are an educational theater company, we offer the opportunity for anyone in the community who's 18 and older who would like to learn or apply a theatrical skill to come and work on one of our shows. We have a lot of people who maybe, you know, someone at home who likes to sew might want to work on costumes, or someone in theater who's always done costumes who might want to learn something about lighting. And everybody in our different areas are more than happy to take the time to help them out. A lot of times someone might say, you know, I want to try my hand at acting. I've never done it before. It looks interesting. And we've gotten people that have come in and I don't understand why they haven't done it for years. They take naturally to it. We might have someone who does it once, crosses it off their bucket list, says, you know what? I was in front of an audience. I enjoyed it. You know, that's all I wanted, to be able to say that I did it once. So first and foremost, I would say that we are an educational theater company. We also are unique in Pittsburgh as a fringe theater company because, well, we call ourselves a tassel theater company because we're on the edge of fringe, literally. The fringe people turn their noses up to us. Very la-di-da.
But what makes Rage a tassel theater company?
We do things that no one else wants to do. It's not a chip on your shoulder whenever everyone else just kind of, you know, we're the three-legged black sheep of the Pittsburgh theater community. And a lot of people don't know that we've been around for, we're going into our 13th season now, our big 13th
season. And congratulations on that. So it may be things that people don't want to do, but clearly it's things that people want to see. Or maybe a certain group of people. Do you feel that Rage has achieved a niche market in Pittsburgh?
I absolutely do. We have a cult following, and it's funny because we look at our audiences and we could have someone's 70-year-old grandmother sitting next to, you know, a young 25-year-old guy who's wrapped in latex with a pink mohawk. And they'll sit there and they will be having the most polite tea chat you've ever seen in your life. And I said, these are people that would have avoided each other and crossed the street not to have to run into the other one. And we also, I can actually say I'm rather proud of how many armchair Joes we've gotten, Pittsburgh guys, who have been drug kicking and screaming by their wives because they don't want to see theater. It's all about pumpkin pants and balconies and the ballet, and they don't want to see it. And they come, and usually if we can get their butts in the seats just one time, it's like watching a movie. We try to put movie quality entertainment on stage, elaborate makeup and costumes. And we are a small outfit, but with a dental floss budget, not even shoestring, but we're creative, and we're able to recycle things, and we do almost exclusively world premiere shows. And so when we're doing all these things, we can bring Pittsburgh something that they haven't necessarily seen before, something really, really unique. And it makes me laugh whenever a lot of husbands will come up to me and they'll say, I've never seen anything like this before. I did not want to come with my wife, but we're never going to miss another one. And so I have a lot of wives to thank for dragging their husbands in to see our shows.
Well, then you'll be very busy when we leave this interview, perhaps. But I've read about a lot of the shows that have been done, and you've actually penned quite a few of them as resident playwright. And quite a few of them are twisted twists on well-known stories, like The Wizard of Oz, for example. So stimulates that approach to a tried-and-true story, putting that twist on it? Or what is that special Schoberg twist on it, Rage of the Stage twist on something like Wizard of Oz? What makes a classic tale like that a Rage of the Stage tale?
Well, we like to find things that people can relate to, because not only, I mean, fundamentally right off the top, it does have a commercial appeal to it. And so theater being a business, it does attract people when it's something they're familiar with. Especially today with the number of shows that are on TV and films that are coming out, twists are really big. We've been doing it for quite some time before fairy tales really seemed to hit big in the past couple years. And it was just something, when I started to get more and more into writing, I thought, what would I like to be in? Or as just an audience member, what would I really, really like to see? And many, many, many years ago, before I actually considered myself to be a playwright, I wanted to do a dark version of Snow White, just not like a twisted warp one, just more in the vein of the Grimm's fairy tale. And I actually wanted to write it at the time we were working at a high school, and I wanted to write it for the kids to do. And So I was looking for version. I went through so many different scripts, and my wife said to me, the legendary Rage word, she said, well, why don't you just write one? And I told her, I said, like, I would even begin to know where to write a play. And so that was sort of the first time I touched upon, I've always been a fan of fairy tales, but that was the first time that we ever touched upon doing something a little bit darker. And then a few years later, when we actually started Rage, the chains were off. So now I could take a fairy tale and do whatever I wanted to it. There was, you know, I wasn't being encumbered by any specific rules. So fairy tales being what they are, they lend themselves to that kind of transformation. And our first really big one would have been Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which we've actually performed twice, and it's gone on to be performed in Calgary and in New York and in Monterey, California. It's one of our very popular ones, and I wanted to do something different with it. I love the text, and it's actually very, very faithful to the original text. When I do any of these adaptations, I am sure to include a lot of the original text, mm-hmm. a lot of the original story, because I want to see how clever I can be. I don't want to think outside the box. I want to be trapped in the box, and I want to see what I can MacGyver, what I can do within the confines of that. And so it's just, not only is it that I like the material, but I also want to see where I can take it that's different, something people haven't necessarily seen before, something that they can relate to, but at the same time, it catches them off guard.
And that avenue always seems to be a dark one. Is it that you're a dark, twisted individual, or, you know, is that just sort of the fit of kind of Rage's mission these days?
Rage's mission spawned from the fact that I'm a rather dark individual, so I will not lie and try to paint myself in a different perspective. I like dark stuff. I really do. And so it's just fun going that route. And I think what's more scary, at least, you know, I'm painfully self-aware. What's scarier is that I have very little difficulty magnetizing other personalities in the city that feel the same way. And so there are a lot of oddballs out there, and and I say that with love. I say that with love in
of
my
course.
Heart.
That's a compliment.
And they come, and these are the kind of things they want to be involved in. And unfortunately, the one thing that I sort of lament is every year I'll get more and more people, and they'll say, where the hell have you been? Why have I never heard of you? And we hit the ground running when it comes to advertising, but it's just that I don't know if it's because of the nature of what it is we do, or the fact that it is a little stranger, and you know, maybe people aren't necessarily giving it a shot. But when I get people in the shows and that, it's, there aren't many other theater companies in the city where they can go to get the crazy contacts and the mm-hmm. makeup, and they can be monsters. And I know it's not solely about that. We have pretty intense, deep stories to go with that. But it's, once again, Halloween, 365 days a year.
And that attention to detail in the makeup and the production values, I mean, it is very specific. It is, you know, very thorough. So, and I know that the term, like, outrageous might be relative in this box, but what do you feel is like the most outrageous production element that you've ever had in one of these shows? What are some of like the top five?
That is a rough one. We have been soaked in blood for many a show.
I should hope so.
And I will have to say, actually, and this outside the scope of makeup, probably the most outrageous moment we've had in a show, which a lot of people didn't know, was when we did a Rocky Horror many years back. We actually, the young man who played Brad and the young man who played Rocky were brothers, and they made out on stage. Of their own volition, mind you, because they said, everyone knows how it is that I work. And with Rage, I have never considered us to be a community theater. And even when we do stuff, it comes as close to real as it possibly can be. There's no turning your head up, stage kisses, you know, no mwah, mwah. And so just starting out in jest, they said, oh, geez, Jim, you know, Rocky and Brad, are you, you know, do we have to make out too? And I just stopped dead. And I went, if you say that now, I said, now the spark's kind of there. I said, and so they just sort of looked at me and said, if you want us to, we'll do it. And I said, well, the Pandora's box is open now. I said, now there is no going back.
Just like a summer camp, you know? Right. Yeah.
And so that was probably our most outrageous moment. But when it comes to makeup and costumes, when we've done fairy tales like Little Red Riding Hood, for example, we had wolves with the full prosthetic and the eyes. Mm-hmm. And we also try to do, we try to bring our best productions are the ones where we're in venues where we're as close to the audience as possible. Because of the attention to detail that we pay, we want them to be able to see the makeup and
so
be on top of them.
So your venues change. You're not always at the same performance phase.
No, we try to be for as long as we can, but it's a matter of budget.
And when they come with the pitchforks and torches, you know,
we move from town to town, we really do. And once we develop a reputation, that's exactly it. Then they storm the castle. But we usually come and we'll plan ourselves for a couple shows. Mm. We were one of our most popular venues was when we were at the Brew House on the south side. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of our resident theater for a while. But after it had closed its doors, we had to move on, and then we sort of started to migrate from space to space, depending on what we could afford, and we would have to adapt the scale of shows because of that. And so we would love to have a more steady space. It would be nice when we're planning shows. It's such a stressful aspect of it.
No, I'm sure.
On top of everything else, you know, you just want to have fun. You want to produce theater. You want to come up with all the concepts and the artistic aspect. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, where are we going to do this?
Yeah. Well, we should mention that we're having the interview this evening at the South Park Theater.
Yes, where we are currently stationed.
In South Park. And you've done a number of shows here in this space, yes?
Yes, yes. This will be our third production here, actually.
Okay. And that will be Dorian Gray, which is coming up very soon. So let's talk about that. That will be the next Rage of the Stage production opening very soon, penned, again, by yourself. Take off on the Oscar Wilde story, the picture of Dorian Gray. What is it about this story particular that lit you up?
Well, that's actually this. The picture of Dorian Gray is my baby. I told Rage, I said, we're going in, you know, 13 years. I have given you guys, I've made you monsters. I've made you freaks, psychos. You guys have gotten to make out. You've gotten all these crazy plays. I've given you all of this. I've asked for nothing. This is my dream project. Hmm. I said, give me this and we can go right back to the insane stuff. No problem. I'll be a happy man. And so we've tried, actually. Dorian Gray is actually one of the few shows that we've had to postpone. We tried it a couple years ago. We started the process, but because of various reasons, it fell through. And so I was devastated. I was really devastated because it was my moment. I was finally going to get a chance to put this on stage. And so then once we had a few more shows under our belt, I said, you know, guys, I'm willing to take another shot at this. I'd really like to take a shot at this. And it's funny because in the interim, from the time that it folded, I had met a young actor who has been with us since our show, The Hamiltons. He was one of the leads and a very handsome young man, very kind. He's an excellent actor, Mr. Vincent Anthony Bombara. And so he, I just seeing him, I said, now's my chance. I have to do Dorian Gray with him because he is ideal. He had all the qualities, and finding Dorian Gray is not easy because they have to have the whole package. And so I approached him about it and I said, you know, you're going to have to do stuff. I said, so this is going
and
to be a challenge.
From you, that's a loaded statement.
That's exactly right. I said, I'm not pulling any punches. And so the particular thing, though, about this story is it really speaks to Rage in that a lot of people don't know there are actually two versions of Dorian Gray. When it was first written, it was written for Lippincott's magazine, and it was only 13 chapters long, and it included a lot of homosexual references and what at the time was considered very lewd and inappropriate. A lot of people called for Oscar Wilde's head, and it had been edited without his knowledge, even a little bit, for the magazine. And then after that had passed, he decided that he wanted to turn it into a complete novel. So in order to do that, he had to edit out some of the original passages that he wanted in the show. I'm sorry, not the show, in the novel. And then he extended it to be 20 chapters, so it would be an entire novel, and he added characters, but it's still, it's an excellent novel. It's considered to be the last great Gothic novel after Frankenstein, Jekyll and Hyde, Dracula, but it still lacked...
perversion, which is where he took over.
Exactly. It lacked a Jim quality, and I thought I knew better than Oscar Wilde. The thing was is that later on in years at his trial for indecency, the novel was used against him as evidence to send him to prison for a hard time for 2 years. And that speaks to Rage in that I had mentioned that we sort of consider ourselves to be the black sheep of the Pittsburgh theater community. And it takes a lot to offend me. And just thinking that that they used someone's art and everything they poured from themselves into this book, and there are a lot of references in it that directly relate to Oscar Wilde's experiences and his life. It was almost a confession of how he felt. And them using that to send him to prison was very, I found that to be appalling. And we could sort of, just the company as a whole could sort of relate to that, because a lot of people who see the work we do, they'll see a poster and they'll be able to tell you everything what we do. We are they. We're them. But if you ask them what show they saw, they have seen nothing. They've not seen a single show. It's just, so sometimes we ride on our reputation, but sometimes it can be not a good thing. And so I decided what I wanted to do was I wanted to do a stage adaptation of the novel, but I went back and I took both novels and I melded them together. So I put all of the original references and things that he had put in, that he wanted to be there, I put them into this, and yet I kept the 20 chapter version because it was flushed out with more characters and it was just more colorful. And I would like to believe, I'm presumptuous enough to believe that this is the way that Oscar Wilde would like to have seen this show. It includes the original heart and passion that he put into it, but yet it still retains from the second version, more of the length to it and more of the diversity. And more, just as I said, it's just a lot more colorful with a lot of sort of eccentric characters. So it's been, the project, it's been ongoing for a long time, with the portraiture has been just an intense subject. We needed to find an actor who we knew was going to be committed, because this is not a flake. I'll hunt you down if you flake out on this project. Because we had to start months in advance. We have a brilliant horror fantasy illustrator named Kari Christensen in Manhattan. And we actually worked with him previously. He did the poster for Hooked. And in our Hooked, our adaptation of Peter Pan, Vinny, who's playing Dorian Gray, actually played Hook. And so he was on the poster. So I was teasing the artist and I said, well, since you're his resident illustrator and you know his face so well, would you be willing to do this portraiture? And he jumped at the opportunity because he loves Dorian Gray, and to be able as an artist to do the entire sequence from beginning to end with the various transformations and
so
the monstrousness.
He did paint several portraits then, because the portrait does get older as Dorian gets younger. I've got one in my attic that's getting younger. I don't know what that means, but so yeah, that's something to consider too, that he probably had to paint several of these. So
yes.
This is incredible.
We did reference photos of Vinny in costume, and then we had sent them to him, and he used those reference photos to actually do the portraits. And starting from the perfect, beautiful one, he had to do an entire series of 7 portraits decaying throughout the entire show. And the audience will actually, in our show, be able to see that, because we're doing it digitally.
Wow.
So they'll actually be able to see the transformations.
Great.
And he did a spectacular job on the work. It's just all the pieces and test pieces I've gotten back. I've even shown them to a few people because he'll send me a test image. And I'll say, well, what do you think about this? And I'm totally blown away. And it's, to him, it's like a doodle on a napkin. He said, well, I just threw a couple, paint strokes over the picture. I just want to see what it was going to look like. And most people think, oh, is that what the picture's going to look like? I said, well, according to him, it's going to be much, much better. I don't know. It's going to be leaping off the canvas at this stage.
So what other gems can we expect then from this production of Oscar Wilde that we may have not seen in any rendition before?
As I had said, a lot of the references that Oscar Wilde put to his sexuality, we've included all of that, so there are a lot more of the homosexual overtones. Because of that, this is also sort of our love letter to the gay community, because we have a lot of friends in the gay community, and a lot of them, we have a following of them, and also they work on our shows, so in abundance. So it's sort of our love letter to them for support, and we're also doing a fundraiser on Wednesday the 23rd. We're just having a pride night to raise money for the Gay and Lesbian Community Center of Pittsburgh. And so we have, that additional content, and it's a lot more specific, and you get to see a lot more.
Well, I see now what you mean by when you say that Oscar Wilde would have liked this version. I think he'd have liked to have been in it, too.
I would have been pleased to have him. I really would have been. But this show, we have spectacular costumes. Our designer, Beth Sherry, who is doing all of our costumes, she actually worked for Cirque du Soleil. And we're going with, a lot of people said, well, Dorian Gray, you guys, as you had also mentioned, you always do a spin on it. And so people were saying, well, what are you going to do to Dorian Gray? And I said, this one is going to be different because it's going to be actually more faithful than people even know. I'm not, there's not going to be an added element of profanity or anything like that. I'm not changing it, setting it in modern times. What we decided to do is our version of putting the rage spin on it is we're doing it visually in what's called the steampunk style, sort of science fiction as seen from the Victorian age, based on Victorian technology. And so that is how we're going to be themed, the costumes and the props. But the story itself is going to be is very, very faithful to the original novel. And so the costumes are going to be something very, very unique for the audience to enjoy. The portraiture, the sex. A lot of people are able, who have not seen a Rage show, just from the reservations that we've been getting, a lot of people who have never seen a Rage show before, I know, are really interested in coming to see this. And I said, well, that, I honestly think it's because Oscar Wilde's name is bigger than mine, and so they can look past it. And they can say, oh, I saw Oscar Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray last night, and they don't even have to mention the company. a lot of them, I actually think that that's a cool element because it's going to blend our audience together. I really think that the audience is in for a treat. It's going to be quite a spectacle. We have brilliant actors. This is one of my favorite casts I've ever worked with. They're all very, very nice. They're attentive. Every rehearsal, I always feel like I told them, I said, I feel like a college professor teaching Wilde, because I'll get on tangents and I'm just analyzing the script over and over and over again, and it comes to the point where, like, Jim, we know you love it, you're passionate about it, could you tell us where to stand? I said, you'll figure it out, the book, we have to talk about the book. I really think that that we have a lot to offer. Finally, Rage can say, okay, well, look, we did something cultural. Remember all the 10 years back when we did Dorian Gray? We contributed to Pittsburgh's culture. Now it's back to dick and fart jokes.
You gotta have that, too. I mean, Pittsburgh's a melting pot,
That it is.
So when do we get to see it?
Dorian Gray has its world premiere on October 18th, and it runs until November 2nd. As I had mentioned, our Pride Night fundraiser is on Wednesday the 23rd of October. And so we're just gearing up for that.
And that is right here at South Park Theater.
Right here at South Park Theater,
excellent,
yes.
Excellent.
8 p.m.
Well, good luck on the run. I have an unrelated question for you. We mentioned Batman earlier. What would be the Batman story that Jim Schoberg would write?
Oh, that's...
DC Comics called you up and said, we're going to give you a one-shot.
That's rough. I mean, I've had people approach me, I mean, like friends that who've asked me questions like that. Well, what would be your ideal this or ideal that? And that's rough. If I am, a lot of people are diehard Joker fans, and I enjoy the Joker. I think he's really cool. But I've always been a Riddler fan.
Yes.
I've always liked Frank Gorshin. And I've always been a Riddler fan. I love the concept of the Riddler. So if I got a chance to do a one-shot, I would probably want to make... write a very gritty Riddler story with Batman, I think. The first thing I would say to them is, Can I do the Riddler? Can the Riddler be the villain in it?
And can you play him?
I
can see that.
I'll be honest with you. That's one role. There was a time I could probably fit in a jumpsuit with question marks all over. Now I'd
that's
start looking like
part.
Adam West.
All those damn villains were spandex. You know, that's why no one's doing it anymore.
Exactly. I think I would probably be arrested for indecency before I was arrested for committing, you know, bank robbery or anything like that. It would, you know,
well,
it would probably be.
That brings me to the topic of the future. What's next for Rage after Dorian Gray?
Well, after Dorian Gray, we're going to be moving into our 13th season. To us, this is a milestone. To most people, it's like the 10th, the 20th, but 13 is our big number. And so we have actually three projects in the hopper. We wanted to try for our 13th season. Usually we just do two productions. We do one in the fall and one in the spring. This time we wanted to see if we could do three, just to sort of celebrate the year. And one of them that we're planning to do is we're bringing back a huge audience fan favorite. So I'm going to kind of leave it at that.
A teaser.
As a teaser.
Yeah.
So we're going to bring back a fan favorite. And then the other two are going to be brand new world premiere productions. We're doing a racy comedy, which is our trademark. And for the fall, we're going to be doing a brand new world premiere epic horror production. And so that one's sort of still under wraps. But I will say that our spring production that we're now currently planning is called Nancy Nightmare's Fucked Up Fairy Tale.
And it's... That'll be for the spring.
That will be for the spring, yes.
Very nice. You know, things will be in bloom. And,
exactly. We'll do around Easter.
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
People, the audience members we get, I noticed that at the fall, a lot of the normies, a lot of normal society, Halloween gives people an excuse to be a little stranger. So they can come and see a show like that and it's not really an issue. It's kind of cool because you go to haunted houses and things like that. It's in the spring, I know, when we have our diehard fans around Easter and things like that, whenever they're coming and seeing, you know, sex and blood. I told them, I said, you know, we do Saturday night shows. You come, allow me to sin for you, and then you can go to church the next morning and be absolved.
Wow.
And you can just say Schoberg made me do it.
That should be in your advertising. I think you might net a few more through that, but we'll be looking forward to that for sure. Jim, thanks so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
On today. In closing, we again want to thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Cefalo's Banquet and Event Center, Off the Wall Theater in Carnegie, Arcade Comedy Theater downtown, and Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. This is Brian Edward. Good night. See you next time.